Welcome back to episode 27 of the Student Physio Podcast. This week you'll be joined by all three of us as we dive into the employment series, talking around extracurricular activities and managing meeting additional learning needs.
Yeah, so I thought we'd jump into it and kind of divide it up into two different sections. First one being pre-graduation, so it might be a bit more helpful for those listening that are still students, and then post-graduation for those who have moving into the world of work. So pre-graduation, I think probably lads would be best if we start talking about that. So just things that came to mind for me that were really useful in kind of putting you a little bit ahead of other people, really good for adding to your CV and bolstering that side of things, was the students' union at the university. So I think all of us can talk about the students' union at the University of Bradford and the societies and clubs in and around that and our involvement. So I don't know if Lewis, you wanted to take it away and start to mention a bit about the societies and clubs that we were involved in.
Yeah, so the three of us were all part of the Physio Society at the University of Bradford, so we were a part of that for 3 years. Each year we kind of varied the role that we were in, so if memory serves me right, we started off Brad being president, Connor being secretary, and then I was on social media, and then year after that we changed it up again. We'd rotated with the other members that were on, had taken a couple more people onto the executive at that point. Each of us had moved into a different role that entailed us taking on new responsibilities, developing new skills. And then we had kind of carried that out for 3 years. So I suppose takeaway from that is, you know, what's benefit and what's beneficial in terms of getting involved within a society, regardless of whether it's physio or not. I think from our perspective, we would definitely vouch for the value of just having that responsibility for other people in sort of like a leadership capacity. So at the time we would have had maybe 60 or 70 members, physio students who were part of the society. So ultimately we're responsible for them, making sure that everything's going smoothly on their course, liaising with the CSP reps who were part of each year group, and then engaging with lecturers and guys who kind of ran the course and just making sure that everything ran smoothly. Additionally to that, we probably mostly focused our time in terms of looking at improving different aspects of the course. So that was us kind of working with the lecturers, with the students, and making sure we're marrying up what both of us want to get out of it. So off the top of my head, thinking about things that we had hosted, we had a couple of events that we had hosted back in second year post COVID. Obviously suicide. Go on.
Yeah, I mean, we had the Suicide Education Day. We got the Thrive, the physios and sport people in to meet the sport demand that the students were asking for. We got some special things, like special lecturers in to look at the hand and wrist and the forearm, because that was somewhere that people felt that their MSK knowledge lacked. So it was really working with the students to find out what areas they felt they needed to improve, and that's the areas we targeted. So although the course at Bradford is brilliant, the subjective feelings of how students were at that time, and especially when COVID was interrupting the teaching, people did have some anxieties around what their knowledge base was and some areas that they thought needed a little bit more time on. So I think us being in that role was great to be able to facilitate what people needed. And I think it's really good. I mean, by being the president and secretary and treasurer as we were, we had like full reign over what we wanted to do with the society, and you can kind of make it what you want. So that was the way we took it. But I think it's probably an important note to put about how we got there. So in our second year, me and Connor, we went through like a liaison post. So I was second year liaison, and Connor, I think you were social media in first year, is that right?
spot on, yeah.
So we didn't have too much to say in the first instance of us being in that team. We weren't taking all the responsibility, but we got an insight into how it ran, and we could see that actually this is something really beneficial for students. This can be beneficial for us. We can learn a lot from managing and leading this team. And then we eventually progressed in the further years when people were stepping down and graduating and such. So yeah,
and
I think it was a really, really good experience, positive.
Something that I wanted to add on that as well is that although we were involved with the Physio Society, and obviously that's perfect because it relates exactly to the course you're doing, quite often there's lots of different roles within the unions at universities that you can get involved with that provide you with the skills that you need to go into the job that you're doing without it actually being directly related to that. So, for example, I was involved with the sports clubs, as was Brad, respective sports clubs in different positions, which gave different skills that you would need. So obviously mentioning about the societies and the different roles there, having meetings and taking minutes from the meetings and reporting back to society members, managing finances with the union, all these sorts of things, you know, managing money, leadership, communication. These are all really, really, really important things to get a good grasp of before you leave university. So I guess the main thing would be just to, as advice, would be just to not pass any opportunity by, like, go and dive in and take up any opportunity that comes your way. It might seem a little bit out of your comfort zone at first, but and it certainly did for me with some of the things that I was involved in, but everyone's there to support you and it's kind of a safe space for you to be involved with these things. The unions at universities are there for the students, so don't hesitate to get involved, and then if you need any help, they'll always be there if you need it. Just trying to think of anything else on top of that. I guess pre-graduation as well, whilst you're on, something that I did think about was when you are on placement, if you do manage to, you're lucky enough to get placement in an area where you're looking to go and work in, if you're lucky enough to get that, diving in into the specifics of that role whilst you're in it. So for example, any PC systems or software for that role that you're looking to go into that they use, if you get in a grasp of that whilst you're on placement there before you graduate, that could help massively. I think Lewis could probably echo that with Excel and some of the data that you handle with now in your private role. Getting a good grasp of how to use those systems, you know, puts you in brilliant stead for graduating.
Yeah, I think it probably something that I hadn't really thought about probably until last year. We were doing a project in one of our modules and it involved designing an annual plan with Excel, and listen, you could have done it from as simple as you wanted to as complex as you wanted. It was fairly open and the Excel wasn't really the important part, but delving a bit deeper into it, if you go and you work in a sports environment, all the S&C guys are using Excel and Power BI and things like this, and it's good to have at least a knowledge of it, albeit you might not have the application for it, but at least being aware of that people are using Excel to a really, really high level and you can get a lot of value out of it as a clinician. From my perspective at that point, that project kind of coincided with me going on the Ben Ashworth course, the athletic shoulder course, and he has basically designed a lot of his work and a lot of his normative data from using Power BI and Microsoft, and I had a good chat with him about it at that point and kind of explained to him what I was doing, and he kind of felt like it's the hidden skill of a physio. You know, it's not something you're necessarily using with patients, but actually to be able to extract really high quality data and put it into purposeful, tabulate it in a purposeful format is so vital and valuable as a clinician in terms of what you're doing to the next, how that influences how you react and respond to the next patient, what that leads you to doing as a team within a clinical environment, and then what that can serve to the wider physio public in terms of, is it publishable, how publishable is it, and what value can that add to the rest of the community. So at that point, that was last November, so at that point I'd started to work through sort of Excel. I actually just started off with Excel how-tos on YouTube. So there's a 5-part series, basically goes like beginner level, intermediate level, beginner entry, intermediate, and then builds up. They're quite a juicy video to watch. They're a good hour and a half each one, but they're valuable. They're a bit difficult to get through and trying to keep track with it and stuff. But from my perspective, how I use Excel now is a lot different to how I used it a year ago. And I got a lot more value out of using Excel now than I did a year ago, just because probably more so of how things have fallen. But I think as a skill and as an external skill that you can go and offer yourself to a potential employer, saying that, yeah, I can use Excel and I can use Excel to a really high level, and I'm comfortable using Power BI or SPSS or things like that, I think is really, really good in terms of, a lot of clinics now want to keep their normative data. Anything that's measurable is quantifiable in some sort of shape or form, and no piece of data is a useless piece of data. So it's about, can you collect and gather as much as you can, and then it's up to you what you want to do with it. You know, you can extract what you want out of it, but you can't do that if it's not there in the first place, and having a good grasp of Excel and using it properly can really go a long way.
Another good example of something there that, you know, that you might be exposed to I can think of in sport environment that most sports clubs are now using is the VLAD or VALD. I often get that wrong, how you pronounce that, but the hub stuff. So
VALD.
So all of the systems that they use, your Nord boards, your groin squeeze bars, all of that sort of stuff, that's nearly commonplace now in most sports clubs. So at a certain level. So if you manage, you know, you're on placement and you've got exposure to that sort of equipment, learning how to use that could be one. Even if you just learn that and learn that really well, that's one massive thing that you can be confident in using. Mm-hmm. If you come in to going into a role that uses it.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think Bradford got the VALD stuff in at the start of last year, and I've been using the VALD from March 2022, so the first placement that I had done at Focus, I had started using the VALD stuff then. To be honest, like, even now there's some stuff on it I've absolutely no idea how to use, but grasping the basics of it and actually understanding what you're testing and why you're testing it, you know, just testing it for the sake of testing, like someone's coming in for, you know, they're coming in with a hamstring injury, you throw them on the Nord board. Well, do you actually know what you're testing on the Nord board and why you're testing it on the Nord board? Similarly with the Forced X, you know, Forced X produces more data than you can make out. You know, it's can you break that up and interpret what you need to interpret out of it, and it's things like that. It's getting exposure to that as a student really early on, being comfortable enough to know I don't have a clue what this is doing and it looks really complicated, but just jumping into it and learning about it and standing watching other people doing it and asking questions. And a lot of the courses that are on offer now, and I'm not saying to go out and, you know, just take a course to learn about VALD, but a lot of the courses that are being taught will involve some form of VALD equipment. You know, whether that's, I don't know, you're looking at calf and Achilles rehab, they're going to be using the Forced X for that. If you're looking at shoulder rehab, they're going to be using the Force Frame for internal external rotation. They're going to be using the Forced X for getting rid of force development and peak force in that IYT position. You know, there's a purpose for it for everything now, and it's definitely something that I would say just to kind of be aware of. You don't necessarily need to know it, but certainly having an awareness of it, what it does and why you're using it, is definitely valuable.
Brad, was there anything else that you wanted to kind of add pre-graduation before we perhaps moved on to talking about post-graduation?
No, I'm just gonna round it up really. I was just gonna kind of say all the points that we've said about there, whether it's relating to NHS, private or sport, being as a student, working with the university, working with the university union, sports clubs, societies, it's all about being proactive. And it just comes back to that message again. Seeking a little bit more rather than being told to do something, seeking it out yourself and taking it to the next level. You know, you have a basic understanding, but can you be proactive and fully understand that? Can you impress the people at your placement so you might get a chance of working there when you've graduated? It's always just being on the front foot, getting your foot in the door and being that proactive student that makes a good impression and that gets all these skills out of it as well, but displays them to the employer.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Shall we move on to post-graduation then?
Yeah, can do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think...
Go on, Brad.
What, I think one of the points we wanted to talk about was juggling multiple jobs, wasn't it? So being able to, obviously coming out of university, all the lecturers kind of said to us, being a band five is tough. You're going to feel tired all the time. And I did feel that. So having two jobs was probably a bit of a shock to the system, going from... kind of not doing much through the week to working 6 days a week was quite a big switch up, but I think it's probably better for me in a way because it just kind of sent you into that overdrive mode. You kind of have to keep going and you kind of have to get up to a level of competence for each of those things. So I think in a way it's really good. It does throw you into the deep end, but you'll sink or swim in that respect regarding how much work you're willing to put into it. But on the flip side of it, if you know you're somebody that kind of you struggled on placement and you thought it was quite a lot and your routine like suffered, or you've got other things, so like you've got a child, for example, or you've got other responsibilities, juggling two jobs straight out of uni might not be the best thing for you. Although you're getting this widespread of experience, it is a lot to take on. Especially when you're trying to get your understanding and your competence up in two completely different areas, if they are in different areas. But yeah, you can also find something that complements. So like for my first rotation, I was doing MSK in the NHS, as well as working at a rugby club. So they kind of sat together quite nicely, had transferability, but you could get stretched quite thin if you're in completely different areas. So yeah, something to consider, I'd say. How about you, Connor? You've got experience with that as well.
Yeah, I think I'd probably just echo what you said there about being aware of spreading yourself too thin. So if you've got that full-time role secured, make sure that you've got your bearings first in that before you then start seeking extra stuff part-time. So my experience was quite similar to Brad, where by both of the roles at Ascenti and then at Ipswich Town were MSK related. So there wasn't quite that switch between different areas of physio, which helped because it meant that you could kind of switch between the two a bit easier. But yeah, don't underestimate the organisation required, you know, to let them know what shifts you can take up, you know, knowing where you're going to have to drive to, for example. So with Ipswich, I was one of the satellite staff, so that meant that I would need to drive to meet the team at whichever club they were playing against. So, you know, being aware of where places are, turning up on time. Oftentimes it was a weekend. You know, it just takes, yeah, again, it's similar to what we mentioned about the pre-graduation extracurricular stuff. It takes you out of your comfort zone again, just as you're getting comfortable sort of thing in your full-time job. If you then can add another thing on with the part-time, not only are you getting experience with two things, but you're also getting lots of skills. So yeah, I would, it's not so, I don't feel like you have to do it. Like if you're not someone that feels like you could manage that, then obviously it wouldn't be worth your time because you wouldn't get the best out of both things. But if you can and it helps you to move towards the path that you're trying to get to, then obviously by all means I would advise that you do that. I don't know if Lewis, you haven't had anything to add from listening to what me and Brad were saying there.
Not really. Probably slightly from the other side. I think having a second part-time role is good for all the reasons that you've went through there. However, I do think that it can have the potential to take away from the full-time role. You know, you kind of get mixed up between the two. And I actually had a conversation the other day with my supervisor. I'd got offered a job that was involved in evening and part-time work, and 3 months into a new job, that I didn't feel like I was ready to take on another role. Now there was a bit of sort of you could kind of do, it was hours that kind of suited me, but the approach or the spin that I took on it was, if I was to take a job like this, I don't want it to be that it's kind of whatever hours suit me. I want to do it that I'm going to be all in or all out for it. And I had pretty much decided that, you know, I didn't feel like I could commit fully to it, that I would be getting the value out of it myself, but I also didn't think that I could offer that team or the coaches and the players everything that I could offer if it did suit. And that my approach was pretty much, I do want to do something like this at some point, but I'll do it whenever I really want to do it, not just when the opportunity comes up. And I think that was just, I kind of felt like the easy thing to do would be to take the role, see how it is, and if I didn't like it, leave it. But then that leaves that team in a fairly precarious position, whereas I nearly felt like I probably made the more mature decision as opposed to the graduate decision, and not just take it and actually think, nah, there's more to it at play than just me taking, you know, an extra, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 hours a week. And being quite selfish about it, things that I was thinking about to not take it were, well, that's 7 or 8 hours that I'll not get to train myself. It'll be 7 or 8 hours that are going to involve 2 extra hours of travel potentially on top of that per session, or depending on how the times fall, it could actually end up being 4 or 5 extra hours of travel. So that's 13 hours a week on top of already doing 40 hours a week. And it's like, I've only just dipped my toe in the water here. I don't think I'm ready to go from 0 to 100 just as quickly as that. So that's kind of the flip side of not taking up extra part-time stuff.
Yeah.
I think a good point just on the whole starting work, and we said managing two jobs, but also just managing your first job is tiring, I think, is a big thing. Yeah. Your brain is so switched on all the time, thinking about it. You don't want to make mistakes, you're trying to do the best, you're trying to learn from every opportunity and just trying to get things right. You come home and you're exhausted, and it's completely normal to feel like that, but you need to take care of yourself. You need to have that well-being element of it for yourself, and if becoming a workaholic and such, mm-hmm. and just throwing more hours into the job, you're not actually going to get time to reflect and go, look, oh, this is what I've learned, this is how I can get the most out of this opportunity, because you're just constantly on the go. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you definitely need to make sure it's the right time for you, and look, these opportunities always come up. It's not like it's the be all and end all.
Exactly.
Just one opportunity, unless it's like your dream club or something like that's come up. But realistically, jobs are always popping up. There's always somebody that needs a physio or a sports.
Yeah, I guess it comes back to what you were saying. So it's just hang on. Dependent on the person, doesn't it? And the situation as well, not necessarily just the person, what they might find themselves in full time. There was a few more different parts post-graduation I wanted to talk about. So there's a little bit of a lag, Brad, so if just let me know if there's anything else that you wanted to speak about. Mm-hmm. All good? All right, perfect. So in terms of post-graduation, something I thought about as well was that interim period, that kind of waiting period to get in your HCPC registration. And sort of seeing that as a free period to get some extra stuff under your belt. So obviously lots of people will be like just sort of sitting around waiting, but that's a perfect kind of time that you could do anything extracurricular, I guess, whether that's online courses from various websites. So if you're involved with the social media side of physio, there's endless different online courses via Zoom or Teams. especially through COVID, there was anyway, that people were putting on for CPD. And oftentimes as a student, you can actually get those for free rather than paid versions as graduates. So that's another great time to get an extra couple things down on the CV, learn about extra things, different aspects that are related to the job that you want to go into. Other roles that or things that I was involved in that came up in that sort of period of time. So volunteering for the London Marathon, something that I didn't even know that, I obviously thinking about it now, it makes perfect sense. There has to be volunteers there because otherwise such a massive event couldn't go ahead. But volunteering as a physio at a marathon event, especially being London Marathon, was a fantastic experience for me, and one that I think you would get incredible value out of regardless of whether you wanted to work in sport or not, because it didn't really matter that they'd been running a marathon. It was just dealing with what the patient was like as they presented to you then and there once finishing. Things like if you are someone that's football inclined, the FA website's got endless courses on there that you can get yourself involved in, safeguarding for adults and children. And then one that I did was Safeguarding in Sport by Paul Stewart, a very lived example of some safeguarding training, the importance of safeguarding, very valuable course there. Yeah, again, these, most of the FA ones are free. This one by Paul Stewart was free as well. And then UK anti-doping, another really good one if you're interested in any aspect of sport. Concussion trainings, England rugby have a head case concussion training. And then on top of that, if you're jumping into these online courses, oftentimes these people that are providing these courses have either created these training programs or know someone or flag and signpost to them from their courses. So effectively, it's the more you expose yourself to, the more you will then see exists, and then therefore you'll be able to take advantage of. So I guess it comes back to that what we said there was, be proactive, dive in. If you've got some spare time, if you like, whilst you're waiting for some registration or whilst you're applying for something, you're waiting to hear back, use that time within reason. Obviously, like we said, don't, like, spreading yourself too thin is often something that you find happens in the physio profession, but it's never going to be a bad thing learning about something new, I guess.
And then just to caveat that, don't be the person that works from as soon as we've graduated till you start a job. Give yourself a bit of a break. It's your last summer holidays. Make sure you're still being proactive.
That was me.
don't just work the whole time, because you'll look back and you'll regret not taking that break, I think. Because it is the last true summer holidays as you get when that finishing uni year. I think we're going to talk about the pre-hospital courses.
Yeah.
So what it was like doing them through sport. So I think you did those at the IPMED.
Yeah, so I did the IPMED,
And yeah, I did the FIACIS level 2, which is the pre-hospital intermediate care. Yeah. I think there are, so obviously following on from sports trauma at Bradford Uni, when we do the MPhys program, very, very similar like principles, and I almost think that our course was at Bradford was kind of written around the way that FIACIS is taught. Lots of similarities, I think it makes you so much more competent, and you just realise there's so much more going on. And I think when you go on these courses and you see the true professionals, the people that do this day in, day out, and you see how smooth, how slick, how knowledgeable these people are about every single scenario that could go wrong in a sporting setting on that game day, I think it just really makes you, it motivated me to be like, okay, there's so much more things that maybe I thought I knew, but there's so much more to it. And then just your actual like practice, or even just that extrication, there's a million ways that can go wrong on game day, and the only way you can get better is just practice. So I think that really it was really beneficial for me, and I'd recommend everybody, even working at a grassroots club, to try and get that on for yourself, because it just opens so many doors that you might not have considered prior, and it's patient athlete safety at the end of the day that we're playing with in these scenarios. So always best to be as informed as possible.
Yeah. I think you've finished speaking, Brad. Sorry, I have to preempt and give it a bit of a delay to when I start talking. Yeah, I think all of the things you mentioned about the physis one, like you said, it's very similar to the ITMF. If you are someone who's looking to go and do those, you're booked on the course, make sure you do your pre-reading. There's no cutting corners with these courses. You know, that at the end of the day, they're signing you off to potentially deal with a life-threatening situation. So do your pre-reading, make sure you're on the ball. It's a two-day course, so it's intense. But, you know, like Brad said, it's absolutely invaluable, the stuff they teach you and the level of teaching as well. Some of the people that are the leading and teaching these courses are, you know, so vastly experienced in this pre-hospital care environment in professional sport. They've seen it all and done it all. So make sure you're all ears and eyes to what they have to say. So yeah, I think that rounds off what I was going to say. Lewis, if you wanted to add anything else or finish up.
I have nothing further to add in regard to pre-hospital care.
Oh, good. How about we touch on CPD since graduating then? So what CPD courses have we been involved with? Lewis, do you want to start us there?
Sorry, cut out. Yeah, me.
Brad, you cut off the last little bit for me there.
So I just said CPD since graduation, really. What sort of things have you been involved in since we graduated? I don't know, it's not been too long for you, Lewis.
Yeah, so in terms of actual CPD outside of work, not a great deal, I don't think. But in terms of within work, so I get 2 hours a week of one-to-one supervision. So that at the moment that's kind of taking up the bulk of the CPD, but there's enough work in that on the side that, you know, I probably don't really need to be doing the extra courses on top of that. So August, or through the month of August there, we've focused on hamstrings and plyometrics. So we take 4 hours of hamstring stuff, and then we take 4 hours of plyometrics. So how we've been doing that really has been, we'll spend one session kind of going through the anatomy, going through pathologies, how they present, different hamstring grading, and then chat generally about some cases that I've got or some cases that are in the clinic currently that are hamstring injuries, and how they present and how different hamstring injuries present, and things to look out for. Then we'll go out into the gym and we'll kind of go through hamstring rehab. And to be quite honest with you, we're at part of the year where there's lots of hamstrings coming through the door with it being championship season. So in terms of getting that real high-end complex hamstring rehab probably isn't really that important just at the moment. It's making sure that we're kind of getting them in, getting them properly assessed, and then giving them good quality rehab as opposed to loads of real complex rehab. So we'll spend a couple of hours going through different phases of rehab, building that up, and then how that looks is that my supervisor will then go off and he'll create the bones of a PowerPoint. I'll then work on it a little bit, fill in a couple of gaps, tidy it all up. I'll give that back to him, and then he'll give me a task to do and give me a sort of like a case study type thing. So I think the hamstring one was I had a field-based athlete who was 10 days post injury. You need to get them back in the next 18 days. What's the next 18 days of rehab look like? And then I'd plan that out for every session, or planned out for the week, and then give that back, and we'll go through that, we'll review that, make some changes, and then we'll keep going until we've got it absolutely bang on the money. So it's kind of that sort of do a little bit, give it to them, they'll review it, pull it back. So that's kind of how my CPD's been looking recently, which is deadly, to be quite honest. Like it's class. You get one-to-one supervision, you know. You can go through stuff in as much detail as you want. There's no time restriction in terms of how much we can go through, how often we can go through it. We can always revert back to it. So like we had finished doing the hamstring stuff maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and then I had quite a complex hamstring come into me during the week, and then we actually came back and reviewed some of the hamstring stuff on Thursday there. I was just tying that into that particular case. So similarly then with the plyometric stuff, using a lot of the Exos performance coaching as our sort of basis to teach me, because I'll be doing my Exos training in the new year, so that kind of preps me for taking part in that course. And that's kind of how my CPD has been looking. So no real sort of online courses or signing up for things. We do loads of in-house stuff at Focus. So on Tuesday we've got a half day of CPD as a team, where we're doing athletic hip and groin pain, so following something similar where there'll be a presentation from one of the clinicians, and then we'll kind of discuss different cases, and then we'll go into the gym and we'll go through different phases of rehab and kind of just challenge each other and see different things, you know, present different things that we've all been seeing, and how that, to be honest, for me, it's probably more, I'll just be feeding off everyone else, not offering an awful lot. But yeah, at the moment, that's kind of how my CPD has been looking.
I think that that collaborative approach that you've got there, like you do a little bit, they do a little bit, and you're constantly getting that feedback, I think that's absolutely excellent. I think, yeah, you're in a very lucky situation to be able to get that one-to-one as sort of like the new grad that's in your workplace, whereas, for example, the NHS, there's so many different people that are just starting. There's not really that one-to-one catered supervision. So, yeah, I think that's excellent, Lewis.
Yeah, I was just going to add on to it that I think that's like in a really exceptional circumstance. Like not everyone's going to get that level, like you've just said. But from my perspective, I feel like that is doable for other people, and that maybe not just to that extreme, but putting in a process that, being really, really strict about the CPD that you're offering the new grads or students or whatever, and going after, like we had sat down at the very start and planned out quite extensively what I was looking to get out of supervision on a weekly basis, and what that would look like monthly, and then what that would look like in 6 months. And that was all largely led by me, and the power was kind of put in my hands, you know. This is the 2 hours a week that I've got. What do I want to get out of it? And that was just what I was going to add, is the supervision that people provide graduates, whether it's in a football club or in a private clinic or in the NHS, I think could be a lot more graduate-led than clinician-led. That, you know, the clinician's thinking this is what the student wants, or this is what the graduate wants, but actually going out and giving the graduate the ability to dictate what they want to go through to me in the first couple of months has helped me immensely, because I recognized quite early that hamstrings are flying in the door. We also need to get them out the door quite quickly. And it was the first thing that I said. I was like, I have 5 or 6 hamstrings nearly every day. We need to get, you know, I need to get them in, and I need to get them out. That's probably something that we could sharpen up straight away. So I think given the power to the graduate for something like supervision and CPD and things like that, I think can go a long way.
Right, did you want to speak about CPD from your angle, or?
I'll fly. And I think just another note on what Lewis said then, it comes back to proactivity. You decide what you want to get out of supervision. And I don't think that's necessarily available for everybody. But even in the NHS, if you come in and you dictate what you want your supervision to be like, this is, I've been reading this, however, like, what are your thoughts on this? Or could we go through this case study that I've done? You can dictate what you want to get out of supervision, even if it's in the NHS, as long as it's specific to your area. So yeah, having that proactivity means you're going to get more out of it, full stop. So yeah, being just aware that supervision doesn't always come to you. You need to make the most of it to get the most out of it. So yeah, just on that. In terms of CPD, so NHS, it has in-service training package for every different rotation. Different areas are obviously going to have different things. So in MSK, it was very like joint specific, condition specific, assessment, rehab, that sort of thing. In community, it's been a little bit different, more looking at like conditions or like, say, how you can help carers, for example, looking at the whole picture rather than just looking at the specific person on their ailment. So yeah, it's been kind of broader, not as specific, and just almost looking at where you can refer onwards. So it helps you become more complete in your job, make sure you're not missing as much. But in terms of like actual straight on development, where you're looking at that sort of case study aspect and feedback and collaborative working, I don't think I've had anything like that as much in the NHS, but it
Yeah.
is always different in different organisations. In terms of CPD, you've got a few things on the go at the moment. So I just did something called adversity, trauma, and resilience training, which is a new project that's been put out by Public Health. To summarise, just really looking at the adversities people can experience in their life, especially as children or as young adults, and how this can develop into trauma, and then how this can affect somebody, or how someone's presentation might be altered, how their ability to make a relationship like with a clinician might be altered. They can't get as much out of it, or they might be more difficult for you to engage with. And it's just kind of having that understanding of this is might be how they're wired up due to what's happened previous in their life, and how can you have a more trauma friendly approach to get the most out of them and try and help them the best. And I think that it's really eye opening. I don't think it's we've touched on it, especially at our physio university. I don't really think we touched on a lot of the things that were discussed there. And I think it was really eye opening to kind of see, looking like beyond somebody's actions, at the reasons why that might be. And obviously, I've only done a small course, and I think a lot of it comes from experience. But until you know what to be looking for and how to respond better, I think that's where it really starts, just having that awareness. And then the last point I wanted to say was CPD in the NHS generally. There's funding for it each year. So there's the NHSE courses, so that's like university courses that are funded. So you could go back and do your master's in MSK management if you wanted to go MSK. There's a respiratory master's, loads of things in between. So especially at Bradford Teaching Hospitals, we've got links with Leeds, Huddersfield and Bradford universities for loads of varying courses. But also there's funding available for any courses you want to be able to do. So this has been renewed for this year. They were unsure whether it would be stopped after last year due to budgets changing, but it's still available. And you get around, I think it's about £300 that you can put onto a course. Just claim that back from your trust. So yeah, keep an eye out for courses that you want to do. For me, the ones I've got upcoming are the NCRE. It's the National Centre of Rehab Education, and they're looking at reviving rehab. So there's people like Joe Gibson, Andrew McCauley, Mehmet Cem, running that course. So it'll be really good, very varied experience, but lots of experience there to look at that rehab journey. And then one of the ones I'm looking into is reconciling pain science with biomechanics, so an area that I'm quite interested in, just mainly due to the population we have in Bradford. A lot of chronic symptoms, a lot of chronic pain, and a lot of psychological elements into it. So how can we combine the biomechanic side of physiotherapy, what's going on inside the person, to the pain science aspect of it, that psychological side, what's going on? And I think Greg does a really good job of tying those two things together and actually giving you practical outcomes of how you can help people. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to
it. The CPD king is Brad.
Yeah, sorry, that was quite long. Connor, if you wanna
jump in about what you've been doing. That was quite impressive. Not that I could hear much of it because it was cutting out, but
yes, by my water.
The content was of high quality, I don't know. CPD for me, I'll try and be concise and to the point. Essentially, with Luton, we review twice per year, November and April, in terms of from a job perspective. So obviously sit down with your line manager and talk about how things are going. So that would be a good opportunity to get some feedback, you know, your what went well, even better if you like, of how things have been going. So yes, you could call that CPD. The other day we did a pre-hospital care revision. So we mentioned quite heavily about our pre-hospital care courses that myself and Brad have done. Obviously being in that environment, if you don't see anything, then you're not practicing it. Obviously you can go over it in your head a million times over, but actually getting that hands-on practical revision time is important. So we spent 2 or 3 hours with Chris, the first team physio, the club doc, and the head of medical, running through the trauma bags, the equipment, where defibrillators are, revising emergency action planning, and how we can improve club-wide things moving forward. Obviously, that's not something that's set in stone when it happens, but it's something that's definitely going to be reviewed frequently. And it was a really good opportunity to refresh the mind on that sort of stuff. So on top of that, we have a weekly team meeting between the daytime full-time staff, just to talk about how the evening clinics are going, management of all the injured players, who's injured, what injury they have, making sure the audits are up to date, and then talking about any other concerns that you have, whether they be safeguarding, or you know, how things are running, or how any staff are getting on, things like that. And then on top of that, completed a SWOT analysis and SMART targets early on in my employment, which is something that we're using to then revise frequently on how I'm getting on with those things. So that's just a continuous thing that we'll pick up in the team meetings. So not necessarily, obviously the pre-hospital care revision is dedicated CPD time, but often in the working world, I think it's probably more true to say that it's that revision time. It's not necessarily, you know, you get a CPD certificate, but there's that continued learning process. If you're talking to people about how you're getting on and things like that, naturally you're going to be reflecting on what you're doing. Simon Parcell at Luton Town, he likes to talk about how he reflects. He uses the travel time to and from work. He'll reflect on the day that's happened when he's on his way home, and then he'll reflect on what happened the day before to see if his mind's changed on anything that he was revising before. I've just seen your hand go up there, Lewis, which is quite a really good way of constantly keeping your mind ticking over on what you've been doing the previous day. How are you going to change it for the next day? And that was pretty much all the CPC stuff I wanted to say. So let's crack on.
I was just going to say on the reflecting, driving to and from work, that's really interesting that you said that, because I literally had a conversation about this on Wednesday. I'm basically saying that was bugging me. So I have a 50-minute commute, particularly on the later evenings when I'm driving home and it's starting to get dark. You're going through every I've started to go through every case in my head thinking, you know, did I do the right thing there? Did I give the right rehab? Like, should I have given a bit more? Should I have given a bit less? Did I overcomplicate it? Did I set, you know, and really, I don't know if it's detrimental. it wasn't put to me that it was detrimental, but in my head driving home it was a lot less enjoyable driving home thinking, have I done the right thing there today? And largely you probably have, and it was put quite bluntly to me, as long as you're not contemplating a life and death situation, it's probably not that important. But by and large,
for me,
basically I've started doing that. Don't know how good of a thing that it actually is to be doing that. And this is completely off topic to this entire episode.
For me, I have a very similar thing.
But I have started doing it, and I don't know if I enjoy doing it.
I think there's two different things. Yeah, sorry. I don't know, there's a bit of a lag, so he's going to keep talking over each other. But I think there's two different things there. There's reflecting on what's happened at work, and then there's questioning the decisions you've made, which are two quite different things. There's reflecting on what happened and just going, okay, so this happened today, what could we do next time? But when you start to think about, did I do the right thing? Should I have done this? You've been very critical at a time where you might want to be winding down. So I think thinking about what you're reflecting on and how you're reflecting is just as important as reflecting. It is a skill at the end of the day, and you don't want to be dwelling on negative things. You want to be able to go, okay, critically, what happened, and then focus on the, okay, what went well as well. Because a lot of the time as humans, we focus on the negative, what went wrong. But I'm sure out of your day, if one thing went wrong, 25 things went right. So thinking about those good things and learning from them as well. I think it all comes back down to mindset, doesn't it, really? But yeah, I think it can be a tool, but like you've just explained there, Lewis, it could become toxic quite
quickly. Yeah, I was going to say that for me, that was something that I personally had experience of when I first started. And actually, that pre-hospital care course that I was involved in put quite a lot of things into perspective. At the end of the day, that is dealing with something that's potentially live or life threatening. Whereas your rehab stuff, obviously you want to get it right, you want to do well, but it makes you think, actually, what's important here? What if you had to prioritize everything you did in the day? If there was that scenario that came and you only got that right in the day, that's what you need to get right. But I think it's a very natural thing if you're someone who's very self-reflective anyway, to be thinking those things. And I'm sure anyone who's listening, student or otherwise, has been through that, especially when you're a student and everything's very new, that you'd be overthinking things. But I think it's normal, and I think there's no problem with it. It's just if you're self-aware of it, then that's a great start, isn't it? You know that you're doing it, so it's a natural process, will improve. And like Brad said, if you're getting better at reflective thinking as a skill, then you can't go wrong. Eventually you'll get to a point where you're able to understand what's self-critique and what's actually reflective to improve in the future. Cool. I think that's a natural sort of end to proceedings.
That.
Would you agree, lads? Perfect. Great. So, Brad, did you want to close off?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, can do. So, thank you everybody to listening. That was episode 27. A little bit of part of our employment series, talking about what we're doing now, and just giving advice anecdotally from what's going on with us. So yeah, thanks for tuning in. If you've got any feedback or anything like that, and you can message on our socials at Physio Podcast One. And so yeah, thank you for listening, and yeah, lads,
perfect.
Thank you for
listening, and bye for now.
Yeah, we'll see you all next time.
This episode is brought to you in partnership with Neonic Training Solutions. Neonic run a student-led physiotherapy clinic based in Shipley, Bradford. Neonic provide placements for a range of healthcare students, offering supported direct patient contact coupled with additional learning opportunities. This creates a unique placement package that can give your confidence and professional development a huge boost. If you're in the Shipley Bradford area and would like to get some help with an injury or a long-term condition, then Neonic may have the solution. Everyone can get a free first appointment advice, and then any subsequent 5 appointments would only cost a total of £20. Neonic offer extremely affordable physiotherapy service, and if you're worried about seeing a student, check out their 5-star Google rating. The students have time dedicated to concentrate on you and are supervised by expert physiotherapy practitioners that have a wealth of experience from a broad range of backgrounds. If you'd like to find out more about their services, whether that's from either a student or a patient perspective, you can find more at neonic.co.uk, and we'll leave a link in the show notes.